This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 175, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 160 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week, I'm talking to Malcolm Robinson about his book, The Bonnybridge UFO Enigma, A Modern Day Mystery. Malcolm has given lectures to clubs and societies in the UK, Ireland, Holland and France. He is the author of 11 books on UFOs and the paranormal. He went down to the depths of Loch Ness in a submarine in 1994. He has assisted television and radio stations all over the world with info on UFOs and the paranormal. He is the assistant editor of the British Outer Limits magazine. He founded the group Strange Phenomena Investigations in Scotland in 1979, making it Scotland's oldest and still going UFO paranormal society with members all over the world. Hi Malcolm, thanks for coming back to the podcast.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be back on, Simon. Looking forward to it.
So we're going to talk about your book. It's called The Bonnybridge UFO Enigma, A Modern Day Mystery. And this is a book you wrote with Ron Halliday. Could you tell us, first of all, where is Bonnybridge?
Well, it's 4 miles west of Falkirk and about 8 miles southwest of Stirling. And it lies north of the Forth and Clyde Canal. And to the south, east end of Bonnybridge, lies the Roman Antonine Wall. And in the 2001 census, Bonnybridge had a population of just under 7,000. It's now got a population since then, obviously, upwards of 9,000. So we're in the central belt. We're near Stirling, near Glasgow and Edinburgh. So, yeah, it's just in the central belt of Scotland.
The Bonnybridge UFO Enigma, it's not that it's all just in Bonnybridge, is it? That's like the centre, but it's around Bonnybridge.
Yeah, it's fair to say that's correct. I mean, people, the press, the media tend to say the Falkirk Triangle, and I'm not happy about that terminology. I've never ever said it was a triangle. I think that's just the media hacks trying to make it something that it's not. I mean, clearly, yes, the central belt of Scotland has seen a wealth of UFO sightings, not just in Bonnybridge itself. And that does indeed encompass the 70 case and Bob Taylor case, etc. But yeah, I mean, when we say Bonnybridge, these sightings are not endemic to that town. It's like Slemanan, Shield Hill, and various other small villages and towns all around Bonnybridge, including, of course, the biggest town in the area, which, of course, is Falkirk, yeah.
And it's not a thing where this is the only kind of UFO stuff that's happened in Scotland, is it? It goes back many decades.
Well, absolutely. Scotland has been touched by the UFO presence, just like any other country in the world, you know, and we've had some astonishing cases here in Scotland. And it's just, I mean, these cases are very, very similar to worldwide cases. There's nothing strange about them as such. Well, having said that, admittedly, the Robert Taylor, Bob Taylor craft was kind of strange. It was a different type of structure as opposed to some of the worldwide UFO reports that's coming. And just so you remember that, what Bob Taylor saw was a large dome-shaped craft, a flange going around its perimeter, with what appeared to him to be like propeller-like devices sticking up from the flange. And I'm not really aware of anything similar to that anywhere else in the world. But having said that, you know, in the main, the sightings above the town of Bonnybridge in Stirlingshire do comprise of your classic flying saucer shape, you know, like two soup plates joined rim to rim. There's also a mass of light phenomena, and that can be balls of light, red, blue, green, seen trailing across the skies. And it's been with us, well, certainly in the Bonnybridge area, since 1982. The official report was 1992 when, you know, it all kicked off with Councillor Billy Buchanan, who was looking into these sightings on behalf of his constituents. But before I even heard about Billy Buchanan, I was doing work in that area at a small town called Larbert, which is only a few miles away from Bonnybridge. And I was dealing with what's known as a repeater witness. And that's a person who claims to see UFOs on a regular basis. And she was an interesting lady, and by God, she saw quite a lot of strange stuff, which clearly did not look like any conventional aircraft or helicopter. And so it was surprising to me to find out that, you know, as my research went on, that area would play a big, big part in my life, you know, 10 years later, 1992, as it did so, and it continues to do.
And that repeater witness, did she have like multiple witness times or take any photos or video?
Yeah, and this is 1982, and although we did have phones then, you know, camera phones, they weren't that great, to be honest with you. And having said that, everybody did have a camera back in the day. And she said to me that any photographs she took didn't come out, you know. And at the end of the day, you've got to, you know, do you believe the witnesses? Are they just saying that? She was seeing strange things in the sky, and we have a list of her drawings that she did. But as far as backup witnesses, if memory serves me correct, I think it was really just her and maybe one or two immediate family members. And I think we do mention that lady in the current book. So she has got a spot in that, just to state the fact that even before I met Billy, we were dealing with stuff in that area 10 years before, yeah.
How did Billy Buchanan come into it? Because he was a councillor, wasn't he? Not an investigator.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. He was elected to serve the constituents of Bonnybridge and various parts of Stirlingshire. He was elected to serve them. And he never, never in his wildest imaginations felt that he would have to deal with something in the skies. You know, he was dealing with mundane things like burst water pipes or problems with the local community, and suddenly people were knocking on his door saying, look, sorry to bother you, but we're seeing some strange stuff in the skies above Bonnybridge, and we don't know who to turn to. So fair play to Billy. You know, he didn't tell them to go away because he was elected to serve them, not to tell them to go away. He had to deal with it. So he took it upon his shoulders to deal with the people of Bonnybridge and surrounding areas. And when I made myself known to him in November of 1992, by God, he was so happy because he, you know, it was too much for him. And he didn't know a great deal about it. And here was myself from a reliable society, Strange Phenomena Investigations, and their members here to help him out. I first heard about Billy Buchanan on Central FM. That was a local radio station. And that was based in Falkirk at the time, I believe. And it was informing its listeners about these UFO sightings. And Councillor Billy Buchanan was on the show. And I heard this show and I went, wow, I've got to get in touch with this fella. So I made myself known to him, as I say, and we teamed up with Billy. And we met countless, countless witnesses and took down their testimonies. And we just took it from there, you know.
And you had SPI and you were part of Bufora?
Yeah, I think it was certainly part of Bufora in 1982. I probably was in 1992 as well. I was a Scottish correspondent. Bufora is, of course, the British Unidentified Flying Object Research Association. And I made many, many, many good friends down in England, because I lived in England for 23 years there. And, you know, Philip Mantle, Rod Howarth, and so many people down there, lovely, lovely people. And, I mean, that is Britain's biggest UFO society. It's kind of on the wane now, unfortunately. But, you know, it did have this reputation as Great Britain's biggest group. So I was representing them. I was also representing SPI. And all we were trying to do, Simon, was just to find out what was going on in the skies of central Scotland. And like any investigator, you have to dot the I's, cross the T's. And what I mean by that is, and I'm sure you know, is that you got to get in touch with the airports, national and local provincial airports, just to see if perhaps there was a sighting, you know, if there was an aircraft in the vicinity of a given sighting. So you would check that off. They check with the Ministry of Defence to see if there were any air exercises ongoing in the Stirlingshire area. They check with local flying clubs. We check with the meteorological stations to see if there were any release of weather balloons. So really, you're trying to do as much as you can. You're also getting in touch with the local police to see if members of the public perhaps have phoned in with a given sighting as well. And I'm pleased to say that the police were very, very helpful back in those days, in the early 1990s, with assisting SPI, as were the journalists. You know, they came forward with some sightings themselves. So it was really, really massive at the time. And this is really before you had all these big television shows, etc. The internet was just really coming to the fore. In point of fact, if my memory serves me correctly, the vast majority of communications that I did personally was all letter. Can you believe that? All letter. Until I got a laptop and computer and stuff. It was incredible. And now, of course, you're touching base with people at other ends of the earth. But in those days, it was just letter. And it doesn't seem that far away. You know, we're talking, 1992. But yeah, it was happy days for me, it really was.
Billy Buchanan had his own sighting eventually, didn't he?
Well, yeah. I mean, simply because it's like anything in life. You're based in an area where there's a high probability of seeing stuff. You're not going to sit indoors and watch Coronation Street. You want to get out there. And Bonnybridge, surrounding Bonnybridge, you have many farms, loads of farmland, you know, sheep and cattle. And so it provides a wonderful opportunity for sky watching, which SPI, we did a lot of sky watching there. And Billy, yes, to answer your question, he's had a number of sightings. He's also taken some footage of something strange in the sky as well. And it's fair to say that Billy Buchanan, oh my goodness, he's taken so much flack from fellow councillors, you know, saying it's ridiculous, a man of his standing be involved with silly wee green men and UFOs, how ridiculous. He's taken a lot of flack by the media. He's been lambasted left, right, centre, and he's still stood firm. He's still stood tall. And as you probably know, Billy Buchanan and I have been down to Whitehall and 10 Downing Street. We've taken petitions down to various prime ministers, the likes of Gordon Brown, John Major, Tony Blair, David Cameron. A couple of years ago, we were down to see Rishi Sunak. Admittedly, we never got to see him, but we handed in a petition. We also, the same day, we handed in a petition at Whitehall and where else was it? Westminster, yes. And Minister of Defence, that was where we went to as well. And the reason we're doing that is we elected the powers that be into 10 Downing Street, and they have a duty to assist the people of this country. And we demanded that the British government come clean and open up a government inquiry as to not just the UFO sightings in Scotland, but the United Kingdom as a whole. And I've been on your show before, I've mentioned this, you know, yes, we have had leaked documents and been drip-fed documents from Whitehall, which clearly showed that they were interested in UFOs. And like I've said before, a lot of these documents are heavily blacked out, paragraph after paragraph after paragraph. What on earth is underneath those paragraphs? It can't just be the witness's name and address. You will get that, of course you will, but not when you go further down the pages. And it's all fell on deaf ears. I've said it before, you know, it's the same, the same tired old statement. And I'll sing it again. They sing it very well. They say that, as these objects do not constitute a threat to the defence of the United Kingdom, the British government will not seek to open up any governmental inquiry. And it really frustrates me, Simon, because some of the sightings in the Bonnybridge area, and honestly, they're so close that these witnesses have said, Malcolm, we could have thrown a stone at it. That's how close they are. And like any interview I give or anybody that comes onto your show or any podcast, they'll always get asked, well, why? What's behind it? What is the raison d'etre? What is behind all these sightings? And even today, I still don't have an answer. I have conjectures, I have speculations, which I'm happy to discuss my speculations with you for sure. And but there must be an agenda. These guys have been with us through time immemorial, as you know. They've been seen in cave art. They've been in Renaissance paintings. It's in the, they've been called Vimanas, ancient texts, etc. And allegedly, they followed the space program, space shuttle. And they're still with us. But Bonnybridge, getting back to Bonnybridge, we can also come back to that later. It has played a big part in my life. And that's why we decided to write this book, The Bonnybridge UFO Enigma. Ron Halliday, my co-author, has been a wonderful researcher. And with the two of us individually have spoken to numerous witnesses in the Stirlingshire area. And just over a year or so ago, I said to Ron, look, I'm thinking about doing a book on the Bonnybridge sightings, and I'd love for you to join me and pull our piles together into one big book, which we've done. And because there was, you know, there is a story to be told here. And we felt that this is a definitive book on the UFO sightings in Bonnybridge. And so we pulled our files together. And what you'll see, if anybody decides to buy the book, please do, folks, is the first half of the book is how I view Bonnybridge. All my witnesses, all the dealings I had with the media, etc. The first part of the book, everything that I've dealt with. Then we have a break, and in the second part, we turn it over to Ron Halliday, and Ron brings forward all his research. And it's great because it gives you a balanced view, you know, of all these sightings that's been going on in the Bonnybridge area. And I think it needed to be done. It's a book that needed to be written. It has a story to be told. Do we have any conclusive answers? Like I said a moment ago, probably not. Plenty of speculations, but what it does do and what it does provide, it gives you a taste and a flavour of how the media treated the whole shooting match in the 90s and early 2000s. It shows you the ridicule that, yes, including myself, not just Billy, we had to face, you know. I mean, I've been accused of hyping it all up, and if it wasn't for me and Billy Buchanan, nobody would hear about, would ever have heard about Bonnybridge. That's terrible. That's crazy. And the reason it is crazy, Simon, is we were out to find, has anybody else seen these sightings? How do we go about it? Do we keep quiet? No, we don't. We go to the Falkirk Herald, we go to the newspapers, and we ask people to come forward. And as you know, Simon, for every five people who have seen a UFO together, only maybe two will come forward and say, yeah, I'm happy to talk. The other three, they were there. They saw the UFO, but they won't come forward for fear of public ridicule. And that's not just endemic to Scotland. That's all over the world. You'll get people, I'm not going forward with my sighting. You can, you know, his friends. And so who knows? Who knows how many more sightings, not just in Scotland we may have, but the world over, that won't go reported for fear of ridicule.
Just how many sightings were there? And this Bonnybridge enigma, would you say it started pretty much in one year and then petered out and finished in another year?
Well, it was ongoing. Clearly, more sightings were generated, I guess, in the first few years of the Bonnybridge enigma. You're talking 1992 to 19, maybe up to maybe 1996. And then it kind of tapered off after then. People might say, well, why? And the only reason I can think of is people were getting fed up, and because they were getting hounded by press and media from all over the world. People were getting stopped in the street, and they were just getting fed up speaking about it and stuff, you know. It was big news at the time, but like anything else in life, you know, it'll just peter away. And now you ask the question, how many? And that's the thing. The media has said it's upwards of 2,000 sightings a year, 3,000 sightings, and that is pure media, you know. And goodness knows where they get their figures. Obviously, they pluck them out of the air. I remember in the first couple of years dealing with the media, I was asked that very same question, and I was comfortable. I was comfortable by saying about 200 sightings in about a two-year period that seemed unusual. And suddenly when I read the newspaper, somebody had added an extra zero to that. So the 200 went to 2,000. And it frustrates you, you know, because you always get, well, not always, but sometimes you get misquoted and misrepresented in the media. I've had it all my life. I'm used to it, you know. But the downside of that, Simon, is people will come up to me and say, Malcolm, I used to like you, but why did you say that to the media? Why did you say that? And I'll say, I never said that. And it's true, you know, people believe what they read in the media. And people will say to me, why did you say that? I had respect for you, Mr. Robinson. I don't anymore. I says, I never said that to the media. And unless you've worked with the media, unless you know how these guys work, then you won't know truly how you can be misrepresented. And it's just one of these things when you work in this field, sadly.
So if we could talk about one of the cases, I found the Patrick Forsyth case to be quite interesting with this fog bank.
Absolutely. I mean, there've been a number of cases in Bonnybridge, and a good maybe half dozen spring to mind, and that's certainly one of them. Patrick Forsyth, yeah, he was in his car, and he had his two young sons, and I think he was going to Stirling to either collect, just trying to remember now, collect his wife from the bingo, and she was at the bingo. And so they're driving on the outskirts of Bonnybridge towards Stirling, and it's a small B road. It's not a major road. And it's farmland to the left and farmland to the right. And one of his young sons screamed out, Dad, 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 what's that? What are you on about? And the young son directed his father to the left-hand side of the vehicle in a sloping farmer's field. There was this jet black hat-shaped object. A wee bit like a bowler hat, but not so refined, not so curved at the top, so more square. And it had three bright green lights on the underside. And like many close proximity UFO witnesses, Patrick Forsyth knew straight away that this wasn't a conventional aircraft or a helicopter. And he was puzzled as to what that was. But the next thing that happened was even more bizarre, because suddenly an instantaneous fog bank, although it wasn't fog as such. If you can imagine a door, maybe about a 10, 12-foot door, suddenly appear in front of your car about 20 yards further down the road, just on your side. So it's, you know, to the grass verge in the middle line. And it was like a foggy mist. And it was very straight line, so it wasn't, you know, coming over. It was all dead straight, just like a door. And I went, Jesus, what's this? And, I mean, I don't drive myself, but drivers have encountered mist on roads in the early evening or the early morning. They'll always get that. It's low-line mist, maybe a couple of inches off the ground. But this was like a door-shaped thing. And as the car went through this door, misty door-like effect, he suddenly felt pins and needles all over his body, like static electricity. And he never stopped the car. He just continued to drive. And if memory serves me correct, I think one of the young sons in the background had looked through the rear window of the car and said it was screaming away towards the direction of Grangemouth. And so that was quite a puzzling case. We interviewed the gentleman in his home. We also, you know, interviewed the two sons, etc. And they impressed me. You know, they impressed me of being sincere, reliable witnesses who were happy to come forward and share their experience. And people, you know, like Patrick Forsyth and other witnesses, look to me to give them an answer. Give them an answer. And I haven't got the answers, you know. And all we can do is just dot the I's and cross the T's, like I said at the top of the show. Check with the airports and the police and see what could have been in that area at the time. And once you've done that, you know what you're left with. And but let us not forget, and I've said this before and I'll continue to say it on any podcast, just because these things look like a UFO, something bizarre. Let us not forget it could be our own technology. There's still stuff flying in the skies above this planet of ours, which is our own black budget technology. And to the untrained eye, that can look very mysterious. And so let us not forget that. That said, that aside, I would not be in this ring, this theatre, if I honestly didn't believe they're dealing with something real, something that's always been with us. I honestly believe we're dealing with some form of non-human intelligence that's always been with us. Sounds crazy, sounds Steven Spielberg. But I'm comfortable saying that, Simon, because we're looking at now about 45 years of research. 45 years. This judgment, that statement doesn't come, you know, in one day. That's over 45 years of built up this reservoir of knowledge. Now, having said all that, the vast majority of UFOs can be explained. We know that, you know, 95% can be explained. The 5% that remained, 4 of that 5 can be explained as well. You're only dealing with 1%. It sounds small. It sounds insignificant, 1%. This is for me, of course, my speculation. But that 1% taken on a global basis is quite a substantial amount. And like I said, you know, I would not be in this arena if I honestly didn't believe we're dealing with something real. And I'm sure that all your lovely listeners, a lot of them will accept that we are dealing with something real, that they have an interest. People who come on to your show and listen to your show have that interest, and that's fantastic.
What that case shows, the Patrick Forsyth, is that with all of this, there wasn't just lights in the sky that people were seeing. They were seeing craft close up.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. I mean, I'm just thinking that Patrick Forsyth case. Yes. Because I think we also gave him a pseudonym of Freddie France, if memory serves me correct. But his real name is out there. But yeah, I mean, we have another one. We have a chap called Ray Prosek. He was driving in his car on the outskirts of Bonnybridge, and he was approaching the Castle Carry Viaduct. Now, this is a very large railway viaduct that spans quite a substantial area of land. And as he was driving towards that, the road actually goes underneath it, he became aware of a large black triangular-shaped craft. It just was sitting above the parapet of this railway viaduct. And so he's slowing down. And as he slowed down, it was joined. This triangle was joined by a secondary, similar triangular object, and were point to point above this parapet. And as he slowed down, he looked to his left, and all the other motorists were slowing down as well. And it was quite astonishing, you know. And then suddenly this one of these objects is lifted straight up into the sky and was gone, and it was joined by the other one as well. Another sighting was, of course, another sighting that made big news at the time, probably at the start of the Bonnybridge phenomenon, to be honest with you, was, of course, the Sloggett family. And they're mentioned in the book. So this is 1992. The mother, the daughter and the son were taking a walk on the moors behind Bonnybridge, their farmers' fields and little dirt tracks and B roads, etc. And it was a lovely night. And as they're walking along here, along this wee road, minding the road business, this large blue ball of light descended from the sky. And it was about the size of a basketball, maybe slightly larger than a basketball. And it landed initially on the road and then on the farmer's field. And as it did so, as it was resting on the farmer's field, the farmer's wire fence, the fence that separates the small road to the field to keep the sheep and the cattle away, started to vibrate. And of course, at that point, they took to their heels. They just ran for their lives. And they claim, and it is quite bizarre, but they claim as they were running away, they heard this large growl sound or something, this unearthly growling sound, which it's only sound that came from a witness case in the Bonnybridge area. And so that was bizarre, yeah. There's so many, and this is the thing, you get asked about certain UFO sightings and you can't remember every single one, only a few spring to mind. But I think what was equally interesting is as the years rolled by from 1992, it became very apparent that this was not just a Scottish story. This was going, you know, nationwide in the UK and then across Europe. And then suddenly Councillor Buchanan and I and SBI were inundated by news cameras, journalists from all over the world. And, you know, it was good and it was bad. And what I mean by that is I dealt with an Australian television company, came over to my house, and they were absolutely lovely. They were wonderful, wonderful. So the guy sets up his camera in my living room, big camera, tripod, camera on the tripod. And then as soon as that red light went on to record, he went, "Malcolm, UFOs over Bonnybridge. A lot of rubbish, aren't they?" And he was looking for me to get upset and angry, you know, and he never, never got that because I just calmly said, "Well, you're entitled to your opinion, but I think the facts state otherwise. And let me tell you about some of these facts." So that's just a wee idea of how the media, will, you know, they're all nice, easy Aussie with you, and then suddenly they'll just spring on you and try and catch you in a trap by saying ridiculous things like that. But they're entitled to because they're trying to make good television for the viewers. And we had Japanese television come over, and there was a chap called Yonichi Yao came over from Japan with his crew, and they were wonderful. And they travelled with Councillor Buchanan and I all over Bonnybridge and Stirlingshire, interviewing witnesses, and they promised us that the outcome of that, this big two-hour documentary, it was going to be showcased in Japan. They'd send me a copy, but it never materialised. I'm still waiting on this. It's 2025. I've still not got it. But, but in the main, you know, people were perplexed. They were looking for answers. I think probably the first, what we had to do, I think it was 1993. Yeah, I think it was May 1993. We commandeered the Norwood Hotel in Bonnybridge because people were demanding explanations because, you know, they were coming to Billy Buchanan, an elected man of the people for the constituency. So he decided to hold a meeting in the Norwood Hotel in May of 1993, and it was absolutely ram-packed. You couldn't get a piece of paper in between the bodies. It was so ram-packed, you know. And so I gave a lecture, and Billy spoke to the people of Bonnybridge. And the beauty of that, Simon, was that people were coming up with their own sightings. And some of them would say, "I don't want to tell you just now. Can I speak to you afterwards when everybody is gone?" So they were coming up whispering to you, "I'll tell you, but later." And so we tried our best just to pacify the people of Bonnybridge that particular evening. And they were all looking for answers. And it was great. And then following that, of course, the following year was even bigger, was the Falkirk Town Hall. And that was over 800 people were in there, the hall that night, and about 200 to 300 people all dressed to the nines couldn't get in because it was full house. And I gave a lecture, Philip Mantle gave a lecture, and we had the wonderful sounds of CE4, Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind. And these guys write and perform songs about ufology, you know, so whereas I talk about it, They write songs. They have these stage mannequin alien grey dummies on the stage. And then they have all the dry ice and the mist pervading all over the stage. And their songs are wonderful. You know, if any, you know, for those that's listening, type in CE4, so that's CEIV, and www.ceiv.co.uk. And that will take you to their website and you'll find out a lot more about it. So that was a good night as well. People were breaking all the health and safety rules. What I mean by that is people were sitting on the floor. People were sitting on the aisle with your steps to get out. You know, if there was a fire, you'd be struggling to get out. There were people sitting where they shouldn't be. But it just shows you the depth of intense interest that Bonnybridge was creating at that particular time. It was some night, yeah.
So with all the reports that came in, did anybody ever report seeing ETs close to an object or any abduction reports?
Yeah, you would think so, wouldn't you? You would think with an amass of sightings ongoing for a number of years that there would be some form of so-called abductions. And to my knowledge, no, none. That's not to say there might be. You know, that's not to say there might be, and people are not coming forward. We'll never, ever know. But to my knowledge, nobody has come forward. I'd just like to know if anybody claims to have been abducted, and that would be quite interesting for sure. We have a number of photographs. We have a number of pieces of video footage, more so taken by a nice guy called Craig Malcolm. And he stays in the town of Larbert, which is near Bonnybridge. And over the course of the early 1990s, he took a considerable amount of video footage of strange lights in the sky, which was used by Sky News, BBC Scotland, ITV. And again, this stuff you might and should be able to get on Google. If you go on YouTube or just search for it on YouTube or type in Bonnybridge UFOs in Google. And so we did have that evidence. And of course, skeptics quite rightly said, well, you know, it could be anything. It could be aircraft in the mist. And absolutely, because even though I, as I said earlier, I believe in this subject and I believe that we're dealing with something real, by God, I'm still skeptical. And I mean, I was dealing with a lady from England. I best not say her name. This is just in the last 2 days. She sent me some, what she said was fantastic footage of lights in the sky. And clearly, yes, interesting. They were moving around in the low-lying cloud. But it's something I've seen many times before. And what that is laser lights illuminating the low-lying cloud, doing a fantastic masquerade, is dance under the clouds, you know. Now, you don't always see the big searchlight beam, so to speak. Sometimes, due to the climatic conditions, you'll only see the remnants of that, and that's the lights as they dance under the clouds. And when I sent an email off explaining that it's only my speculation, I would need to find out if there was maybe an opening of a nightclub 2, 3, 4 miles away, or somebody was using these searchlights. I would need to check that first. But this, at the moment, is my speculation. I haven't heard from her, so she's maybe upset with that that speculation.
Well, one of the videos you talk about in the book, was it the Malcolm family video? Was that impressive?
Yeah, the Craig Malcolm family, that's the gentleman I spoke about a moment ago. Yeah, some of that footage is indeed very, very good. And, well, when I say very good, it's not spectacular. It depends what people mean by very good. We're not looking at a phantasmagorical craft that we can't recognise. It's just lights moving in the sky, making erratic movements, you know. And yes, admittedly, it could be anything. But you have to bear in mind that this guy, Craig Malcolm, wonderful chap, he was seeing UFOs that regular that he actually built a big platform on his back garden. You know, in America, in forests, you get these big towers, wooden towers, watchtowers. It was similar to that, only on a smaller scale. And we're dealing with ancient aliens here. I think it was last year, the TV program, and we were filming at Craig Malcolm's house. But sadly, that tower is not there anymore. But the footage was interesting.
You ask a question in the book. You say, were Billy and I the cause of the Bonnybridge UFO sightings?
Well, like I said, you know, people have been saying that it was us that created the Bonnybridge phenomena. But like I said earlier, we're only trying to get answers. And how do you get answers? You try and ask the readers of local newspapers, or you go on radio shows. And because we were doing that, because we were in the newspapers and on radio shows, we were They were saying that we were hyping it all up. We were portraying it. We were building it up into something it probably wasn't. But that's not the case. You know, if you have a ufologist in Manchester or Birmingham or wherever, and he needs to know if anybody else has seen sightings of UFOs in the Birmingham or Manchester area, he doesn't keep quiet. He's got to go in the newspapers or local radio. And it's a no-win situation, because when we do, when we do that, we're accused of just, you know, bumming it all up, so to speak. So it can be quite disappointing sometimes.
So there was one incident as well with the radio. I think, was it Ron Halliday and Stuart Campbell were on Radio Clyde? And it almost seems like there was an ambush there with a real skeptic.
Yeah, I was on that show. Well, Stuart Campbell, a nice guy. He's an Edinburgh chap, surveyor and scientist. I wouldn't even say he's a skeptic, he's a debunker. He debunks everything. If you show him a white piece of paper, that's a nice piece of black paper you've got there, you know. So anyway, Stuart Campbell, he was a big skeptic on UFOs, and he was one of the main researchers in the Declan Woods case just before I arrived. And, in Declan Woods' case, he said that what Bob Taylor saw was black ball lightning. Then it was a mirage of Venus. So he was trying to, you know, tick off all the possibilities. But with this radio show, yes, it was lovely, because Ron Halliday and I was on there. And, we were just being honest, saying, well, it might be this and it might be that. And Stuart was getting very uptight, saying, there's not such things as UFOs, and it's this and it's that, and it's swamp gas and it's this. And it made good radio, you know, and it was quite comical. We all shook hands and were friends afterwards. And I did a live television show, God, when would that be? Oh, a good number of years ago. It was live over Scottish television. It was live over the radio, and it was called We the Jury. And so if you can imagine a TV set with the brass railings, you know, like a court of law, the brass railings, and you've got the jury there and everything. So I was sitting out front as the guy who believes in UFOs, and I'm going to tell you why. And then facing me on the floor was the same guy, Stuart Campbell. And then behind us, to my left, was UFO experiencers, people who had seen UFOs. And to Stuart's right was the scientists and astronomers and all the big wigs. And the person that was hosting, the lady who was hosting the show, says, right, Malcolm, you have 2.5 minutes to state your case of why you believe the UFOs are real. So I stood up and I went on for 2.5 minutes with no notes. Okay, thank you, Malcolm. Over to Stuart Campbell. Stuart, why do you think there's no such things as UFOs? Stuart took a piece of paper with all his notes up to his face and read off line by line. You know, at least I didn't use paper. Anyway, cut a long story short, that you'll find on YouTube, the We the Jury. Look for it on YouTube. And it got very, very heated. It made fantastic television. And one of my dear friends, Brian McMullen, God bless him, he's no longer with us, one of his friends was being interrupted by one of these astronomers, and Brian turned round to this astronomer on live television and says, you shut up. We've gave you plenty of time to speak. Now it's our time to speak. You know, so that will give you a flavour of how rough and ready this TV live debate was. And the upshot of that, Simon, was once they heard all the debate and it went over the airways and it was coming in, people were voting on live on television, The lady who was running the whole show said, would the foreman of the jury please rise and give us your verdict? So this foreman of the jury rose up. We the jury, we find in favour of UFOs has been a real phenomena by 9-3. And at that point, Simon, the whole courthouse went, whoa. We all rose up. And I remember that same night, I had to jump in a car immediately after the show, and we drove through the night from Aberdeen, I think it was, that was filmed, to Northampton in England. And I was sleeping in the back of the car and the rain's battering off the roof. And then I had to get up in the morning and do a lecture in Northampton. It was good times. Great memories.
Are there military bases there? Are the RAF doing any testing or flying of anything?
Not in the Borybris Stirlingshire area for sure. There's no military bases in the area. And obviously that's a good question, because sceptics would say, you know, there must be a military base there. They're test flying some drones, some new fancy aircraft, etc. But no, there's nothing of that nature in there. So that's quite, you know, bizarre. But the thing is, with Bonnybridge, like any window area or hotspot, you know, is that we have people from all walks of life, Simon. You know, young people, middle-aged people, elderly people witnessing these sightings, people from all walks of life, you know, people, shopkeepers, police officers, firemen. In fact, yes, if memory serves me correct, Gabdrum Moss, there was a fire crew who witnessed a strange ball of light come down above this reservoir, this red ball of light, and do some crazy stuff and move away. And that's just the interesting thing with the UFO situation. It's not always structured craft. It can be these balls of light. And equally, this is just as interesting as the structured craft as well, for sure.
And was there any radar confirmation for anything? I know you did write to them, didn't you?
Yeah, and would you believe we wrote to Edinburgh Airport back in the day, the early 1990s, and said, is there any chance that we could come up to the tower and, you know, just have a look at your radar and talk to you guys about, you know, flights, etc.? Never in a million years thinking that they would say yes. But they did. Can you believe that? And so myself and a number of SBI people travelled over to Edinburgh Airport, and we got ushered up into the big tower, you know, the big main tower. And we saw all these radar scopes and everything. And needless to say, I'm not backward in coming forward, because I was saying to all the radar operators, guys, you know why we're here? Because, you know, obviously the manager had told them, it's a UFO group coming, guys, being in best behaviour. I said to this radar chap, have you had any anomalous returns on your scope? And he just smiled at me. He says, honestly, I can't answer that. He says, we do get some strange returns, but these might be weather conditions, you know. And but you could clearly see he would love to have said something else. There was something behind what he would love to say. And it was just great that in the heady days of the early 1990s, at Edinburgh Airport, you know, took a bunch of ufologists up to their tower. And I'll never forget it. It was great.
And you also wrote to the MOD about this. And is it you got letters back from Nick Pope while he was still there?
Yeah, we have, I think, some of the letters that they're in Ron and I's book, just to show the reader that, you know, here are some of the letters that we got back from the prime ministers and Nick Pope. Nick Pope was still in office, if that's the right word, probably not. And he was still in the UFO desk. And he was saying that, you know, there's nothing there, nothing, we can't help you. There's no strange craft flying in the skies. We did a podcast, not a podcast, a film, excuse me, with some TV crew, can't remember. And yeah, I can't remember. I was going to try to remember. But anyway, we did this TV thing, and they managed to track down Nick Pope to get an apology, because Councillor Buchanan was so angry at Nick Pope always saying there's nothing in Bonnybridge. Absolute rubbish. There's nothing in Bonnybridge. Well, the TV guys tracked Nick Pope down. They interviewed him, and Nick Pope can be seen on this video doing a humble backtrack apology, stating, I am so sorry. I would like to apologise to all the people of Bonnybridge. Yes, it does look that, yes, indeed, there has been an ongoing strangeness in the skies above your town. So it was great for Nick Pope to get that humble apology. And I've met Nick Pope, as many people have over the years. You know, because I'm a lecturer, I've lectured over in different countries with Nick. And sometimes he gets a bad press. You know, he's an agent provocateur, and he's in league with the Ministry of Defence and all this. I don't think so. He's been a fortunate man. He's very, very fortunate to have come out of that UFO position in Whitehall. And because he is a knowledgeable guy, he's a very, very clever man, he's very intelligent, And no wonder he's been featured on countless TV shows the world over, because he's a great talker. He's a great speaker. Is he trying to cover up things and this and that and other? Not for me. For me personally, and I could be wrong. But I think Nick's fine. And he just says it as it is. But there'll be listeners who will tell me otherwise, no doubt. But that's just me.
Do you think that he does know more, but because of his signing the Official Secrets Act, he knows that he can't tell you this other stuff?
There is that possibility, Simon. Of course there is, you know, and it's the same with all these military people and naval people who come forward in the past 2 or 3 years, that they do know more. And whether Nick, I would like to say that Nick probably does know more, because he was in that valued position where he was. Because what he told me was, he says, Malcolm, I'll be honest with you, he says, when I sat in that desk, I went, oh, here we go. Christ almighty, what's this? Yeah, it was. And then it was partly that was low-flying nuisance aircraft as well, so you had to deal with that. And you go, what a load of rubbish. And then he started to get more and more reports coming over his desk. And he went, wait a minute, is that our own stuff? Is that our own stuff? So he tried to knock on, this is what he's telling me. So he says he tried to knock on some doors, and the doors were firmly closed. You don't need to know. But you don't need to know. No, I want to know, because people are asking. He never got told. Now, that's what Nick Pope told me, that he did try to get verification of some of the more stranger British UFO reports, but the doors were always locked to him. And I believe that. I think that's still probably the case today.
And what do you think of this sort of blanket response where they say, there's no defence significance? Because to me, it seems like if there's craft that can come and go from our skies whenever they want and however they want, we can't stop them. That's the definition of defence significance.
Absolutely. Of course there is. Definitely. This is a defence significance. But then again, if they were clear, if they had bad interests, or if they had bad interests at heart, then they would have done something by now, you know. And so maybe that's why they believe that they are aware. Let's speculate again. The British government, the military and all that, they do know that we're dealing with a recognisable phenomenon, but they've came to terms with it. And in as much as they don't think it's a threat, because if it was a threat, something would have happened by now. But the problem arises with that. Is it is a threat? Why? Because of the UFO abductions, because of the taking of people from the comfort of their own beds, of their own cars, and experimented on. We can't say that that's crazy and it's not true. Of course it's true. It's happening all over the world. It's happened in Britain. It's happened in Scotland, Wales, Ireland. And it's that for me, and I said it on your show the last time I was on, that for me makes me so angry, that we are like an experiment. And why do they do these abductions? And I've said it before on your show, you know, that if they're taking sperm and ova and they're trying to recreate this population, a hybrid program, then why are they still taking these samples? You know, they can get that from a hospital. They can, you know, surreptitiously go into a hospital and take that genetic coding and stuff. I think they need to get the emotions of mankind. It's something to do with us. I was asked the other day, you know, what do you think's going on? And I think maybe, and this is just speculation on my part, maybe, just maybe, we, that as human beings, are the experiment, that we were placed here on planet Earth by these greys or whatever. And what they're doing is putting things into us. They're not taking things from us. They're genetically modifying. Absolutely speculation on my part. I could be way off the beam up there. But if we don't, as researchers, look out the box, if we don't think of all the crazy things, we'll never, ever learn. We've got to think out the box and address these bizarre possibilities, because we're dealing, science is learning. We know next to nothing. We're talking about quarks and neutrinos and superspace. And, you know, the chair you're sitting on is solid, but if you break it under an electron microscope, everything is dancing about, the molecules. Everything is We're dealing in vibrations. We're dealing with dimensions. And I'm a big fan of Jacques Vallée, the French astronomer. And I've read all his books and stuff. And I think he's possibly on the right track. These guys, these greys, call them what you will, do not necessarily have to travel expanse of distance from a distant star system. They could be here in the blink of an eye. There could be a dimensional shift. They might not only have bases under the oceans of this planet, but they could just be something dimensional. And again, it's speculation, of course, but it doesn't give us an answer, does it? It's just speculation.
Well, it's been great talking to you. The book's called The Bonnybridge UFO Enigma, A Modern Day Mystery, and people can get that on Amazon.
That's correct. It's available on Amazon, and it's, as I say, it's a definitive book of these sightings. It really has it all, Simon. All the sightings, it has the going down to 10 Downing Street, how the media dealt with it. So it's all in there, yeah.
Well, thanks again for coming on the podcast.
It's been an absolute pleasure, and many thanks. And you're doing a wonderful, wonderful job. And I look forward to speaking to you in the not-so-distant future.
Thanks. And that was an interview with Malcolm Robertson about his book, The Bonnybridge UFO Enigma, A Modern Day Mystery. A great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can get exclusive access to the extended version of this episode. Just go to patreon.com/AlienUFOPodcast. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you want to try out the extended episodes, there is a now 7-day free trial. And please check out my new book. It's called Verified Near-Death Experiences, and it's on Amazon. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The link is in the show notes. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.